You're listening to The Litter Box, a Detroit Tigers podcast with your hosts, Chet West and Bill Patterson. Here's what's on deck for this episode.
Riley Green. I'm starting to cheer for Riley Green a little more.
Players on the wrong side of 35 and just flummoxing the Tigers.
Yet every coach out there, and they're all examining his swing, going through every piece of it.
There are a couple places that keep the bone in, and you kind of have to gnaw around it.
Litterbox listeners, welcome back. Another episode here of the Litterbox Detroit Tigers podcast. I enjoyed watching these games against the Halos this past week. The outcomes were a little better. We at least got 2 out of 3, which is nice. It's nice to win a series. We said last week, Bill, we got to win series. We won a series that we should have won. And the Halos, you know, they were adding at the deadline, so they aren't exactly out of it. A few games back. Bill, what'd you feel? What'd you see?
I was absolutely in panic mode. Full anxiety going on after Saturday night's loss.
That's what made it fun. I mean, they never really sealed the deal in any game early on.
No. Quick recap. We know they took the series. Friday win, Saturday loss. Saturday and then Sunday win. But Saturday's loss with the Guardians, the Tigers were 5 games up in the division, and I wasn't comfortable going to sleep that night.
I don't think we're going to be comfortable for the rest of the season.
I don't either. But that was the first time I've been
comfort flew out the door past the All-Star break.
Yeah, Chet, I've been comfortable and sleeping like a baby since, I don't know, the second week, third week of April. And now all of a sudden I'm having night terrors and, you know, seeing Stephen Kwan in my sleep.
I don't blame you. And by the way, I mean, this is the crux of baseball is you got a 162-game marathon. It's not 81 games. It's not 16, 17 games. It's not, you got to go, you're running a marathon. At some point, you're going to stumble, and they have. And you're going to fall, and they have. And you may not get up for a while, and they have not quite gotten up yet, maybe, but we'll see. They're stumbling to their feet, I feel. Maybe, maybe not. But we had it good for months. And now is the challenge. Can they finish this long race? I liked what I saw, except for the relievers again. This bullpen, it's giving me heart issues. Do you remember years back? I want to say it was in the mid-teens, 2015, 16, somewhere in there. We played the Orioles in the playoffs. Do you remember this?
Yeah, it was the last time the Tigers were good before last year. Yes.
Exactly. Scherzer was still pitching for us. We had Verlander still pitching for us. And we would get these great starts out of those guys, and we'd have like a 2 or 3 run lead going into the late innings, and our bullpen would just nuke it every single game of that playoff series. It was like, here comes the bullpen, and there goes the lead, and the Orioles win again. And we were losing to a subpar Orioles team. We had a better team than them, but our bullpen could not hold a lead. I feel like we may be going down that ugly path again. But hey, we got 2 out of 3 from the Halos. I'll take it. Game one was a close one. 6-5 Tiger victory. Compliments of A1 Matt Vierling and a 3-run homer in the 8th. I was really happy to see Vierling do something finally this season. I mean, he won us a game there. Your thoughts?
Players of the game, to what you said, Troy Melton gets the nod as the pitcher, my stars of the game, however you want to phrase it.
Okay.
And then I'm going to give it to Vierling for the game-winning shot. Outside of that, the game ebbed and flowed. It was fun from a competitive standpoint. And I got to say, the Halos, as surprised as I was that they were buyers, they've been fun to play against this year. And that being said, again, the hitting's been erratic. This is the night that Riley Green finally got off the schneid and got a single, which is nice, but I am going to segue into something just a little bit here, and I want you to chew on it while I talk a little bit about the question you asked me earlier.
Okay.
And that is, I'm finding this team, it's really difficult for me to find a Tiger that, like, who's my Tiger? Who do I love? Like, who's my guy? And I want you to think about that.
Yeah, okay.
And I give me a retort. So you were referencing the 2014.
Was that the 2014 playoffs? Is that what I'm
And that was the division series. The Tigers lined up in this order. Max Scherzer against Chris Tillman.
Okay.
Brad Brack against Justin Verlander.
Okay.
And your favorite and mine, the world beater that is Bud Norris against David Price, and lost all three games.
You would think we'd win those, right? Just on name recognition.
Two out of three, given that you have two Hall of Famers. Easily. And David Price might find his way in someday with the way the weirdness of pitching these days. Doubtful, sure. But whatever.
Sure.
And then you know who the hero was? Zach Britton was the closer. And that
was a young guy back then. That was the difference.
Yeah. So anyway, now that you've chewed on my question, let's talk about lovability. Who's your Tiger? Who's your guy?
I am still, you're going to love this, but I'm still a Torque guy and a Colt Keith guy. Colt is probably my guy, like my main guy that I pull for. I want to see him keep surging. Torque is just, I can't quit him. You know, I don't understand it. I see him come to the plate. I start cheering for him in my head. Come on, Torque, do it. And sometimes it's maddening. Sometimes it's, hey, you got a home run in game one. It was a beautiful thing. He's just one of those guys I pull for. I don't really know why. Maybe because he's been down and, you know, he's the number one overall and kind of had a rough go so far, and I'm pulling for him to pull out of it. I don't know. You know who's kind of creeping into my... I'm going to give you a little more after we do the game recaps here. Riley Green. I'm starting to cheer for Riley Green a little more. And not that I never did. I always thought he's a good player. Don't get me wrong. But you've heard me talk. I get a little frustrated with his approach sometimes. I read a great article by Cody Stavenhagen in The Athletic today about Riley Green and what he's going through right now. I'm going to recap some things and throw some stats at you here in a little bit when we get off the game recap. I'm going to do a whole little Riley Green section for you. It's going to be fascinating. Let's talk about Melton.
You
wanted to do yours?
Of course.
Did you want to give me who you're in love with? Go for it.
No, that was the biggest point, was that I don't have that
love
affair.
You don't have anyone, do you?
Meaning that Riley Green's always been my true heartthrob, but I feel like he and I are...
Dingler? I thought Dingler was kind of
no,
in your...
Dingler has replaced it. Yes, I'm saying that. And that's going to lead into something later on. But the rest of the guys that I like outside of those two starters, Dingler and Green, are all the guys that come up from AAA or utility guys. It's Z-Mac. It's Perez.
Yeah.
It's
the scrappers.
Carp. Yeah. And I am finding it very, very hard to fall in love with this team because I find the guys I gravitate towards either are super streaky, looking at you, Riley Green, really in their, it's not his rookie year, but it's his first full year, Dylan Dingler. And then a bunch of guys that are essentially scrappers or utility guys. And I am struggling with it, possibly also because it's this losing streak. But even when they were winning, I just couldn't button down who my guy was. And that is my most frustrating part as we go through the dog days of August right now.
I understand that. And the baseball season's long. I mean, it's just such a long time to sit and glom on to like one player. They're going to burn you a little bit at some point. It's just a long season.
Stephen Kwan never glums me.
Boy, there's an infatuation there. Stephen Kwan is your guy. He's your guy in MLB right now, the whole league. So Troy Melton went 3.1, two hits and a run, two Ks, no walks. He did give up a dinger. I like what I see from him, and I'd much rather see him starting than Craig Morton or Paddock. Although I think Paddock's doing a pretty good job tonight against the Sox. So
Charlie,
last I checked. Charlie Morton. Sorry, not Craig Morton. Craig Morton was a NFL quarterback for the Broncos.
I think he started that Super Bowl against the Cowboys, and Charlie Morton didn't do so well.
Goodness.
That's a good Craig Morton reference.
So many Mortons. Johnny Morton, Charlie Morton.
For our Mile High listeners.
And Kyle Finnegan has been a great pickup so far. What we thought we were going to get with
him
to
a
degree.
Yeah. That was an easy crystal ball.
Yep. Easy crystal ball. So Tarek Skubal had a kind of an unskubal-like game. He was a little ranty. He got a little ranty on the mound. He didn't like a lot of calls he was getting. Day after, ump scorecard showed that he probably didn't get squeezed quite as much as we thought he did. There were a couple key pitches that he did get squeezed a little on, though. But otherwise, it wasn't, you know, I think we got the benefit over the Angels in that game as far as ump calls go. So, okay, 4.2 innings, 6 hits, 4 runs, 6 Ks, 2 walks, and he gave up 2 dingers, which there's the problem, Tarek, not the zone. The dingers.
So that was a problem.
That's okay. He's allowed to have a little bit of a stinker. Yeah. It was a problem all weekend. The ball was going out of the yard. None of these games were particularly low scoring. So 6-5 Tiger win in game one. Game two, slightly different story. I don't know if I can sit here and tell you that I watched all of this game. I got pieces of it. I felt really good going into the fifth when it was 4-4. And I think Charlie just stayed in one inning too long. What do you think?
Yeah, actually, I did tune into this one. And our guy, Charlie / Craig Morton, which is going to be his nickname going forward.
Okay.
Just over 4 innings pitched, 4.1. And this is the weirdest stat line you're going to see, possibly for a Tigers starting pitcher all season. Here. 7 hits. 6 runs, all earned, only 1 walked, and here's the aberration in it, Chet. He struck out 10.
What a bizarre. He was either unhittable or extremely hittable, one or the other. And there was no in-between in this one.
2 of those earned runs were home runs. So he threw 90 pitches, so he wasn't really locating it or dealing. But the weird part is 62 of them were strikes, and when he was dealing, guys are swinging and missing, but it just didn't happen enough.
We did get a Rafael Montero sighting. Tigers did lose. We got a Montero sighting, though. He went 1.2, gave up 1 hit. That's it. In his first outing. He was the good Montero. You remember, this is the guy that when he's good, he's striking guys out. When he's bad, he's walking people because he can't find the plate. Tyler Holton did 1.1 innings. It was nice to see him bounce back. Didn't give up any runs. New acquisition, Cody Huer. He was not great. 1.2 innings. He gave up a run, gave up a home run. He did have 2 Ks, but he also threw a walk in there. Had a little bit of a rough outing, but I think the game was kind of not, it was out of reach maybe by the time he got around there. Yusei Kikuchi. I mean, who'd we see? Kyle Hendricks in game one and Yusei Kikuchi in game two. These are guys that are kind of past their born on dating, if you know what I mean. These aren't supposed to be really tough starters that we went up against. Would you agree?
Absolutely. And the weird part about this is when the Tigers have lost to the Halos this year, if we go back when they first played them, the professor, Kyle Hendricks, was the one that flummoxed them in their only loss.
Yeah.
And so here you're seeing, again, players on the wrong side of 35 and just flummoxing the Tigers, which is... Again,
I feel like Charlie Morton would have just left us spellbound if we were up against him.
He would have struck out 18 Kerry Wood style.
Easily. Yeah. I don't understand it. So, so we went up against some guys that, shouldn't have been that tough. They got us in game two. I just thought it was sort of an ugly last 4 or 5 innings there.
So my game balls are stars, if you would go out. I'm going to give Montero it for pitching 1.2 and doing what he needed to do. And then this one's tough, but Javi Baez did go 3-for-4 and played short and center field, which at the end of this season, let's picture a high school sports awards banquet.
Yeah.
I don't think the Tigers are going to do that. I think they basically clean out their lockers and Scott Boras yells at some people and that's what happens.
Yeah.
Scott Harris yells back. But if they did have a banquet with really bad rubber chicken and mashed potatoes and green beans and all that, Javi Baez would have to get some type of award for doing the yeoman's work that he's done in two of the
most
difficult positions.
He's stayed relatively consistent with the bat too. He doesn't hit every game, but he had a good game one in this series. He had a decent game two. He had 2 RBIs in the first game. He had a good game two, obviously, of this series. I mean, he's not Javier Baez good right now, But is Javier Baez good?
I'm going to go back to Javier Baez good.
Well,
I'm looking at this and his
average. Is he back? Is the alter ego back?
I don't know about this Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde for Mr. Baez. But I will say, Saturday, after that 3-for-4 effort, he was closer to batting 270 than he was batting the Mendoza line like he has been the last 2 years. It's come down, Chet. I'm talking about Saturday's game.
Yeah.
But, you know, you look at his on base, it's just below 300. His slugging's, you know, still above 400. And the fact that he's manning these two positions that are, quite frankly, inexcusable that the Tigers don't have a center fielder in their organization at all is just befuddling to me.
Yeah.
And that's another one of my complaints. Sure. Can we put game two to bed now?
Yeah, put it to bed and let's do game three. What do you have for us?
This one felt good. 9-5 victory over the Halos. And, you know, in terms of giving out stars, this one's pretty easy. Karp homered and drove in three to really lead the Tigers in that win. And Casey Mize, he really pitched a good game, 5 innings. Three hits, two
this
runs.
This is a typical, this is what Casey's done. Outside of a stinker or two, this is like his typical stat line right here. 5 innings, 2 runs, 5 Ks, and I'm done.
What jumps at me also is the fact that he is now 11-4 on the year with a 3.50 ERA. So he's also been fortunate or fortuitous or somewhat just lucky. We got bad Montero this game if we want to talk a little bit about Jekyll and Hyde.
This is the game the pen really disappointed me. I was like, can't you guys just close this thing out for crying out loud? Well, we had a nice lead. I mean, they weren't catching up to us. And then you got Tommy Canley out there. I don't know what to do with him. He
must be as bald as a cue ball at this point.
Gotta be. Gotta
there can't be,
just be shiny.
Any body hair None. Left to shave.
Like electrolysis level stuff.
Nothing.
Here.
Nothing.
He's got an inning, 2 hits, a run. He only threw 11 pitches, still managed to give up a run somehow. I don't know what to do with him. Again, he's throwing the changeup 82% of the time. You got to really locate it real well to be able to be successful with that.
The problem is it's flat and fat in the zone. So
yeah, it's really covering too much of the plate. Rafael Montero did what Rafael Montero does. He walked 3 guys, 1.2 innings. It looks like Rafael Montero was left out there for just an inning too long. He had a
Which
good
is
seventh.
Hysterical when he pitched 1 inning.
Well, I mean,
inning too long.
He went 1.2. He went 1.2. He went out to the eighth inning and immediately walked and gave up runs, and they pulled him, and Vest had to come in and finish it up and clean up his mess. So Vest went 1.1 with a hit and 2 Ks. That's, you know, great to see because he's kind of been bumped by Finnegan a little out of that closer role. So it was good to see him in, well, I guess what became somewhat of a high leverage situation after Montero blew up, and Canley couldn't keep a run off the board.
So two things that need to be talked about. Tommy Canley's ERA is now 4.96 on the year. It is doubled in the last 32 days. And then Montero, his ERA is 5.70. This is what happens when you shop in the bargain bin.
Yeah, you're going to get very inconsistent results, which is kind of our MO this year, it seems, inconsistency. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to touch on something with you in regards to some stats I saw. First funny stat I saw today. Have you been watching what Carlos Correa has done since returning to Houston? It reminds me of these situations where it's like a player's really happy to be somewhere.
Yes.
So their whole level of play just rises. I mean, he was batting like 260 for the Twins. He had a couple home runs, like 6 or 7 home runs on the season. He wasn't lighting the world afire, especially for what he was being paid. Since returning to Houston, he has a 405 batting average, 6 multi-hit games in 10 days, a 209 WRC plus, 2 home runs, and almost a 1.1 OPS. That is a major flip. A major flip. And Altuve, in his 3-game series, he's very happy to have Carlos back. From everything I hear, they're buddies. real happy to be playing together again. Altuve in a 3-game set went 6-for-11 with 2 home runs, a double, 5 RBIs, 3 walks, and only 2 Ks. I fear Houston right now. I feel like they're going to get that mojo back that they had a couple years ago, pre-Carlos's departure. They're going to be a problem for teams going down the stretch. They just strike me as somebody that will. But what I really wanted to hammer on was Riley Green. I want to talk to you about some stats around this guy, okay? What are your thoughts on Riley Green? And currently, he is on pace. He will set the Tigers' single-season strikeout record for a batter. He will. It's almost impossible for him not to right now. He's only like a few away. I think he's got 159 Ks right now. The record is 182. First trivia question of this whole segment. Who holds the single-season Tigers strikeout record at 182?
Rob Deer.
You're very close. He's actually he's in the top five, I believe. Cecil Fielder, 1990.
Okay. Yeah.
He also hit 51 freaking home runs that year. Oh, Cecil struck out a ton, also hit a lot of home runs. And if you look across the strikeouts, like Mark Reynolds holds the all-time record at 223. He had something like 42 home runs that season. It was 2009. So that's the one that people are saying Riley Green's on pace to have 212, which would put him in the top five, or would put him ninth, excuse me. Sorry, not in the top five. And so that's if things, you know, stay the same or improve, he's going to have 212 or less. 223 is the record. If things go south more, he could get there. He is doing some things to keep that from happening. I didn't know this, and maybe this is more common in this day and age, but would you be surprised to know that Riley Green really doesn't take batting practice on the field?
I alluded to this already in
Did you talk
June.
About this at one point? And I just completely glossed right past it.
I talked about how laconic and laid back he is in warmups. And no, he doesn't take batting practice. He doesn't shag flies. He can lazily play long toss with somebody else in the outfield. He is like...
He apparently has been working pretty hard at this, trying to get out of his slump. He does a lot of work in the underground cage instead of taking batting practice up top. He likes the privacy and he likes to go through his routine. So he uses the underground cage instead. And they have a lot of tech down there now that these hitters can use to prep for a pitcher and stuff. So I kind of get it. I think that's something that's sort of, you know, players are sort of trending towards. He does currently lead the league in Ks, which is why he's doing all this. And he's had every coach out there. So all of a sudden, this past week, he's decided to go out and start hitting outside because he wants to actually see the ball off the bat and whatnot. He had every coach out there, and they're all examining his swing, going through every piece of it. He's trying to change his approach as to what he's swinging at. He struggles with 2 pitches. He's never really struggled too much with a high strike, but it's the low spinner that's always got him. But now the high strike's starting to get him, and it's because he's trying to kind of watch for both. And he's basically said, I can't cover the whole thing. So I'm going to lay off a one and go after the other and look for the other one and defend against that, which, yeah, it's good to see he's thinking of this stuff. AJ Hinch is a little more tough love. He's just kind of like, you know what gets a guy out of a slump? Hitting. He's like, what makes a player feel good? Hitting. You're not going to pat him on the back. You're not going to do anything. He just needs to hit. So we got to get him back in there hitting. He is at a 32.8% K rate right now, which is very high. It's the highest of his career. His walk rate, which is even more concerning, 5.9%, which is very, very low. That's the lowest of his career by almost cut in half. His chase rate is 32.2, which is 4 above the league average, which is 28% chase rate. His first pitch swinging, he swings 40.7% at first pitches. League average on that's like 31%. So I think there's a patience aspect of this here. And I think he needs to kind of hone in on like what's he looking for up there at the plate. And I think he's working on that based on what he's been saying. Hinch dropped him to 6th in the order Friday night. He responded by going 2-for-4. Hinch didn't hit him Saturday against a lefty. He is not a platoon guy like Carey and Colt. He is always hit against lefties. He pulled him against the lefty on Saturday. And on Sunday, he put him back in the cleanup spot and rewarded him with a home run. and a couple hits. So I think we went 2 for 5 on Sunday. So maybe some of this stuff is starting to work. But the one thing, one stat that stood out to me on the, as a whole team, the Tigers have the worst walk rate in baseball since the All-Star break. What happened at the All-Star break to this team?
That I don't have an answer for because you completely threw me for a loop because I pulled
You had everything all ready to go.
Yeah, regarding Green.
I didn't prep you for this. So I get, you know, off the top of your head, what do you think is going on with this? I think
the biggest difference is that Torres isn't taking as many pitches. And I think they're getting bitten in the rear, which we have talked about on this, for not having a true leadoff hitter.
Yeah.
And so
that might be hurting.
I think this all comes back to Parker Meadows and what a failure. And I do mean failure.
Oh, are really dropping it on him. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's been an abject failure to this team all season. A, being injured, and B being ineffective. And I would also say that Matt Vierling's part B of this. If Meadows is A, Vierling's B, and he's now also joining Meadows on the injured list. So that means Javier, Baez, or Baez has to man center field even more, and we still don't have a true leadoff hitter. So, you know, again, shame on the organization. I have never been a Parker Meadows guy. I don't believe in it. I think 3 good weeks last year in the, you know, tail end of the season, 4 good weeks, whatever you want to call it, doesn't account for his career. Yeah. And I've never been a Matt Vierling fan. He is a replacement level player. And I don't mean plus or minus. He is just a guy. He's 0.0. He moves the needle in no direction. And that's my take for you on it. Torres was doing a yeoman's work earlier in the season, taking a lot of pitches.
Yeah.
And he has, for some reason, become more impatient. And that is,
I think the whole team's just started to press a little.
Yeah. So can I get back to Green really quick?
Yeah. Go back to Green. What are your thoughts on all that?
Well, no, I mean, his career numbers are alarming in a few categories. So he came up in 2022, struck out 120 times. Not good, not bad.
Not terrible for a guy who's going to hit for some power.
Yeah, he didn't really hit for that much power there.
Prototypically.
Problem. Yeah. So next year, 2023, 114 strikeouts. Last year, 156. He's there today. Here's the other thing. Let's look at his average. 2022, 253. 2023, 288.
Mm-hmm.
2024, 262. This year, 269. The crazier part is his on-base percentage is exactly where his strikeout level goes. So this year it's at 314. Year one, 2022, 321. The in-between or Oreo cookie cream sandwich years, it was just about 350, 349, 348. The only thing saving him this year, and I do mean the only thing saving him, is his slugging. He's at a 507 slug, which puts his on-base plus slug at 821, which is still 6 points below where it was last year.
Yeah, he's still hitting the ball hard. He's still
thing, though, Chet. His WAR has fallen off a cliff. He was 1.4 his first year, 1.9, jumped to 5.4 last year. You can say the reason the Tigers were good outside of Tarek Skubal last year was because of him. This year, he has regressed to a 2.1. It's not terrible, but you cannot build a franchise around this type of individual.
Unless you got to wonder who he is. Who is he? Like, who is this guy? Is he last year's 5.1, or is he, you know, every other year's 2 WAR kind of position player? Maybe he's not utility, but he's out there doing it. You know, he got another hit today, so the game's not over yet, but they're tied 1-1 going to the bottom of the eighth here. So he's got another hit under his belt, and he batted fifth today. Torque got a hit. It looks like Dingler did some damage and got the RBI. He got a walk. So I want to be more patient. And what I see at the top of the order in today's game right now, and we're not going to do the White Sox series yet. We'll wait till the next episode on that. But Torres and Karp have 5 Ks between the two of them at the top of the order.
Well, the other interesting thing is that Torres is batting leadoff today.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I don't know that he likes that spot.
No,
we've talked about this before. He's like a career 2 hitter type guy. Like, I don't know that that's where he's comfortable. Maybe he's taking one for the team. I don't know.
Well, and if you go, the third hitter is Perez. He should probably be batting leadoff.
That's a weird lineup, right?
Yeah. Well, no, but because he's a switch. He's the only switch hitter they have. So he should be batting leadoff. I'm absolutely baffled, and I'm starting to think that AJ Hinch is running out of options as well, which is unfortunate.
That may be the case. So we got the Sox on tap. Okay. Yes. Let's flip over to the next series. We got the Sox on tap. It's 1-1 right now going into the bottom of the eighth. It looks like Finnegan's out there in a 1-1 tie. So maybe Vest gets the save on this one if we can get there. Do you feel like the Sox have been surging lately?
Yeah.
Is this their young talent starting to play some baseball?
They had the second best record after the Guardians up until this 6-game losing streak, which coincidentally happened against the Guardians, who are the best team in baseball after the All-Star break. Yeah, I mean, I think
this series marked on our calendars, it should be an easy getaway, get 2 out of 3 and walk out. I don't know that it's that the way they've been playing lately. They've been giving everybody hell.
So it's not only that, it's also how bad the Tigers are playing.
Yeah.
Basically, this series, if the Tigers win 2 out of 3, that tells me nothing about this team. If they get swept, there'll be reason for concern, especially considering what the Guardians do. Then they have a 4-game set coming up this weekend against the Twins in Minnesota. What I'm really, really, really curious about is next week when they play the Astros.
Okay.
Because that's the first, like, real playoff team where, I mean, let's face it, the White Sox and Twins aren't going to the postseason this year. And at that point in time, that's when I'm going to push the panic button, or that's when I'm going to say this team will just be fine. It all depends on what happens against the Astros. So let's just hang in there. I mean,
it's a long slog.
It's a long slog.
It's a long slog. We'll just hang in there and see what happens.
Food.
Oh, yeah. Well, what do you have? Do you have something?
Yeah, and this is outside the ballpark. I did this earlier in the year. So one of the things that the South Side of Chicago is famous for is not only the Polish, which we covered well, but they also do a pork chop sandwich. And so that is a boneless pork chop on a hamburger bun. Picture a cheap hamburger bun, you know, just the kind you get at the grocery
Something
store.
Something soft and easy to get through.
White bread, yeah.
No
high,
seeds.
High in sugar. Nothing like that. Bare bones. A pile of grilled onions and a slather of yellow mustard. I am doing research. There are a couple places that keep the bone in and you kind of have to gnaw around it.
Jeez, that doesn't, I would just rather go bone out.
Yeah, bone out.
Flavor be damned.
This is a very popular cuisine after the Polish or the traditional Chicago-style hot dog. It is offered at the park. I've not tried one at guaranteed rate. It's way too messy, and I can only have so many onions and talk to other people probably in good conscience.
There's something about guaranteed rate in the cell and the smell of onions in the air.
There is.
Reminds me, it literally every time I smell grilled onions, like a sauteed onion or a grilled onion, it reminds me of guaranteed rate field.
It takes you back to your first.
The second you walk in there, it's like, oh, the onions are here.
Takes you back to your first shower in the outfield.
It does. Never did it. I never did it. You've done it. I've never done that one. But I definitely have that grilled onion smell in, like, and I totally relate it to that ballpark. And then I got to go get a Polish and the grilled onions. I got to do that whole bit. Yeah, it's...
You already have two dogs steaming in your cargo short pockets. What's going on here?
Why not? Those are just for extra innings. Those are for just, you know, later on. Bill, I think we've covered it today.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts? Go Tigers. Let's get at least 3 against the Sox. I thought I'd be hoping for sweeps, but
I mean, if we could get 2 series wins, this series, the Twin series...
We're going to be okay.
And then
it's a long run.
Show me what happens against the Astros.
Everybody take a breath. Here we go. We're going on the roller coaster for the final month and a half here. Enjoy yourselves. Enjoy the series. We'll be back to talk at the close of this one before they take on the Twins, hopefully. Have a good one, folks. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of The Litter Box, a Detroit Tigers podcast. Thanks for hanging out with us. We're Bill and Chet. We'll be back soon with more Tigers talk. If you're enjoying the show, be sure to follow or subscribe on Spotify. Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And hey, if you got a minute, leave us a quick review. Till next time, go Tigers!